Hello, and welcome to the Back Issue Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer.
In this episode, we'll be having a spoiler-filled discussion about an older comic book storyline.
In this Back Issue Spotlight, I'm joined by Sam, and we're going to be discussing the second half of the third New Teen Titans trade paperback, which reprints the four-issue Tales of the New Teen Titans miniseries from 1982. Sam, how you doing tonight?
I am wonderful, John. How are you?
I am doing well. Now, this is a four-issue miniseries from 1982. I point that out because back in 1982, miniseries were not that common. To the point where this on the cover actually says, miniseries, one of four. And this was running concurrently with the New Teen Titans title at the time. I don't remember exactly if it was staggered like 2 weeks off or how it was. But this story seems to take place, I think we decided before we started recording, what, between issues 20 and 21?
Yes, that's what it appears, at least according to cover dates and such.
Well, and also kind of where they slotted it in the trade, because we just read 20 is the end of the previous part of this trade. They sandwich this in, it's a contiguous chunk of time for the Titans, and then we'll head off presumably into 21. And back at that point, they had a better sense of continuity is kind of the word I want and kind of not the word I want. They had a better sense of the never-ending saga and a cohesive timeline as long as you're willing to give, hey, for 4 months in this book, they're going to be doing this thing for a chunk of time, while in this other book for some of those months, they're after this story, you know? So you gotta run with some of that. But all in all, it's cool. And they used this four-issue series to take the new members of the Titans and really do a deeper dive on their backstory. And I thought that was just a ton of fun. And man, I love the covers on these issues.
They are unique. Yeah, with all the shadowy images, or how do you describe those?
Well, I would say you've got in the foreground an action pinup kind of a shot of the character, and then in the background you've got kind of a montage of key moments of their life or something of that sort.
Yeah, and they all tend to be kind of monochromatic backgrounds, mm-hmm. even with the line work and then the full color on like kind of that main image out front.
The hero shot or whatever is in full color, and the rest is clearly background kind of stuff, so they're not competing with each other.
Nope.
And of course, it's George Perez art, so, you know, I'm not going to complain about that. This is great stuff.
It's amazing. I was checking. Mr. Perez appears to be doing both of these at the same time, both these issues and the regular issues. That being said, it's interesting the way it's worded in these as compared to those. If you look at, like, you know, the Teen Titans issues from the time, well, I guess no. Rather than inker, both Romeo Tanishel in the regular series and what is this gentleman's name?
Brett Breeding.
Breeding are listed as embellishers, not inkers. I don't know what that implies about how much they did or didn't do.
I think George did a lot of the line work, but maybe not all of it, and that they were kind of either tightening it up or literally embellishing some of it, adding a little bit more to it than literally just tracing, I don't want to say tracing the lines, inkers do more than that, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
There may have been lines the embellisher puts down that the inker would not have.
Fair enough. And again, in both series, it's interesting how much of, with the nature of this and kind of the flashback nature of it and the way these pages are constructed, mm-hmm. some of these have fairly elaborate backgrounds, while some of them don't. The vast majority do.
Well, there's some scenes, some panels where you kind of need to establish it or whatever. And then there's some, because, I mean, the framing sequence is basically they're out camping and they're telling stories, you know, in the evening over dinner. Mm-hmm. Of, you know, the backstory of, you know, Cyborg or Raven or Changeling or Starfire. And in some of those, when they're, you know, starting to cook dinner or whatever, yeah, there's like no background. Maybe there's a tree branch or something, and that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
But there doesn't really need to be background for those, because at that point the focus is the characters.
Absolutely. But then you look at some of these other pages, you know, like the very first page. The inking work on the Grand Canyon alone is a massive endeavor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then when you get into some of the backstories, when you get again into some of that monochromatic stuff on like page 5 of this issue, or the inset panel on the next page with like Cyborg's face and then the younger him, and, you know, there's some really extensive work as well.
Well, yeah, because I think there's a couple of pages in each of these issues that are just packed with a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that one page, I guess it's like page 8, where we've got almost the montage of
yep.
Vic's childhood as he's getting into the sports and stuff. There's not the clear panel delineations, but there's, you know, 7 or 8 sort of panels worth of stuff going on in there. You know, and there are some other pages that it's just, again, comics from this era had a heavier story density and such, sometimes in terms of words, sometimes in terms of panels, sometimes both. And the even with embellishers or whatever on two different titles, this still had to be quite a bit of work for George to do.
Absolutely.
And particularly when we get to like the page where we start seeing the robotics and stuff that's going to become the cyborg part of Cyborg there on, I think it's page 15.
Yeah, it's crazy. The detail, the number of panels, the back, all of it.
Yeah.
It's insane how much work goes into a page like that.
It's, you know, and that's, again, part of what I love about this creative team is, you know, these are all 25-page issues, mm-hmm. which by today's is, you know, 5 additional pages than most comics seem to get or whatever. But we're getting really the full backstory of each of these characters, one per issue and stuff, plus a framing sequence. And that's stuff that these days they would have, you know, spun out into a 6-issue miniseries or something.
Yeah.
But we get just a lot of density of story. We get to really know these characters. And some of it is also just little bits that just kind of trickle out and stuff. Like, I mean, the focus here is on Cyborg, but this is also one of the few times we see Raven out of costume. We learn she's a vegetarian, you know, so we're getting some stuff about some of the other characters as this is going along. And, you know, I've read New Teen Titans, you know, for literally decades now. It's been, I don't remember the last time I read this miniseries, to be honest. I'd forgotten parts of his backstory at this point. You know, the whole kind of guinea pig aspect to his childhood. And it's easy to lose sight of how smart he was, given there's always this focus on the athletic side of Vic Stone here, kind of the influence of the gangs and stuff like that. And, I mean, he's obviously smart enough to maintain his cyborg body and whatnot, but it's one of those things that I think it's easy as a reader, and certainly I imagine for some of the other creators other than Marv and George, I think they lose sight of that at times.
Yeah, well, and not just, it's interesting because an aspect I either never, well, probably never knew, because it hasn't been kind of focused on in some of the newer retellings, is how angry Vic was even before Cyborg.
Yeah. He was definitely, did not have the happiest of childhoods.
Yeah.
And I definitely left a mark on him.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of that comes out and you think of that as, oh, because of the whole Cyborg thing. But no, it, you know, this at least shows it was there before that.
I think everything they had set up prior to that was ample justification for a superhero origin without the whole accident that turned him into Cyborg.
Oh, that's absolutely fair.
You know, and it's interesting because I would love to see a parallel Earth version of this character, this backstory, except having that other world version be more of a bookworm, a geek, not an athlete or something, and either turn into a more tech cyborg where, you know, sure, he's just as strong as the cyborg, but you kind of forget that because he's always doing the geek science approach to things or something.
Yeah, Peter Parker-esque Vic Stone.
Yeah, exactly. So I think there's a lot of ways they could have gone with this character. And I think a lot of these aspects of his backstory, how he was brought up, his intelligence, even some of the gang influence and stuff, I don't feel was really in the New 52 retelling of the origin.
Well, yeah, and that's probably the version I'm, at least at this point, thinking of most. And yeah, I mean, most of the issues between him and his father in the newer version seem to be all about the accident, whereas this clearly shows it was there long before that.
Mm-hmm. The other thing I would love to see is this version of Cyborg teaming up with the then current version of Firestorm.
Mm.
Because Ronnie Raymond, another football player, you know, high school athlete type, had issues with his father and stuff like that. There's some definite parallels that could be played up, yet they're also very different people.
Yeah.
And I think those two, and there's still a ton that could be done with those two today, because the other thing they've kind of got in common outside of comics, ironically, is they were both kind of later members in the Super Friends cartoon.
Mm.
You know? So they were some of the few characters to kind of encroach on the A-list lineup of Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, you know, Aquaman and Robin and such in that show. So yeah, I thought this really covered a lot of ground of the backstory of Cyborg, his origin, and just we really get to know him a lot better. So it was surprising how much they packed into, you know, the 25 pages and such.
Did they ever bring back this Ron character? Do you know?
I don't think so.
Again, that would be something that would be interesting to bring back, you know, either what happened to him in, you know, becoming a, you know, he's got the beginnings of a villain here.
Well.
Or something, you know, much less interesting and more tragic happening to him.
They could do something with this character, but he seemed to have a definite finale there on that last page of the story.
Sort of.
It's comics, so yes, absolutely they could bring him back and it could be an arch-villain or whatever for Cyborg or whatnot. That's not the route they wound up taking as far as I know.
Yeah.
But it's never too late.
Absolutely.
Well, given we've had a reboot or three since then, maybe it
yeah,
is.
I was gonna
I
say,
don't know.
Who knows if he even exists anymore.
Yeah, yeah. So I thought this was a lot of fun, and just seeing the Titans kind of hanging out in their off time or whatever was one of the things I really do enjoy about this miniseries.
Yes, and I can't tell if Raven's got a terrible fashion sense or that was still the fashion in 1982.
They actually mention at the beginning that it took about half a day to convince her to come and another yep. half a day for them to find something she could wear.
Yes.
So it may have just been a little of what was the fashion at the time and what could they actually get in a hurry?
Yeah.
So, but again, it's so often that we just see her in her heroic getup or whatever, that seeing her out of costume at all is fairly rare.
Yeah, yeah. Not seeing her in the blue is shocking. Even yeah. the fact that they chose a different color, regardless of the outfit, is unusual.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Agreed. Now, the second issue, we get her backstory. Now, some of this we knew some aspects of from what had already happened in the title, but they go into a lot more detail of her childhood and some of that stuff.
Yes. Yeah, yes, no.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say different, not more.
They spend more time on it. I don't know that we learn anything overly revelatory.
Well, I think we learn a lot more about maybe her early days. I mean, obviously the entire series started with her showing up and, you know, hey, we need to stop my father and all of that. So that part we kind of knew.
Yeah, I just think we spent a little bit more time on Azarath and yeah. learned a little more about that.
Absolutely.
And by extension, about Raven and such. But again, we'd already gotten Trigon and some of that stuff, so we knew a lot of the high points of her story.
Yes.
You know, likewise, we knew a lot of the high points of Cyborg's story from previous issues of the main series, too.
I don't know. I don't remember feeling like I'd gotten much about his pre-Cyborg life. Maybe I'm just not remembering.
I think we got the facts. I don't think we got it kind of spelled out in action the way we did in the first issue here.
Yeah, particularly anything that was non-athletics related, if that makes sense.
I'm trying to think if we'd gotten stuff about his run-in with the gangs and stuff like that or not, and I don't remember.
Yeah, me neither.
I mean, it in all of these, it feels like we're spending more time and focusing on stuff that may have come out just as, you know, incidental remarks in a caption or a line of dialogue or something like that. Obviously, with Raven, Trigon having been a key story element and whatnot, there's a little more there. But just kind of getting the explanation of what was going on with Azarath and all of that stuff, and what led to her kind of recruiting the Titans.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, like I said, we kind of got it from there forward, but not... Well, we got a lot about Trigon, her mother, and Azarath, all that we didn't get much of previously.
Yeah, and usually when we would got it, it'd be like a one-page caption, you know, filled splash or something of...
Yeah.
Here's the backstory you must know. Let's go fight Trigon now.
Yeah, exactly.
I've got to say, page 13, where we get kind of the montage page here, I just think it's hilarious seeing this, I don't know, 6-year-old Raven or whatnot in her costume already.
Yep.
I mean, just, it's a little hilarious because, I mean, at this point, thinking we'd ever see, you know, that young of a Raven kind of in action or whatever was almost unthinkable, but yet that's about as tall as the one in the Teen Titans cartoon was. So, just kind of funny. The other thing that always bothered me about the cartoon, though, was her catchphrase or mantra of Azarath, Metreon, Xynthos. And we're here on Azarath, so I see where that comes from. I don't know where Metreon or Xynthos comes from.
Well, and the other part that I don't think we had the idea of... And again, that same page you're on is so good at it, that shot of her mother in the top right.
Mm-hmm.
The almost being raised by a cult and occasionally glimpsing her mother, but not really being with her mother.
The forced separation of the two.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we'd gotten lines of dialogue of Raven saying, oh, I can't indulge an emotion or whatever. Mm-hmm. And now we really see kind of the toll that's taken over the course of her childhood and such, and start to get a better understanding as to exactly why that is.
Yeah. And again, a lot of that separation we would have assumed previously was because of Trigon, but a lot of it's not.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, there's a parallel Earth story to be told of what if the people on Azarath had taken a radically different approach to raising her?
Yeah.
You know, instead of barring emotion, she really, you know, embraced them. And I mean, imagine the Titans where she has the open emotional aspect that Starfire has, and Starfire is the more reserved, quiet one or something. There's a lot of fun stuff they could do. And what they did was great. So I'm not...
Absolutely. And again, a lot of it, like I said, I understand it all from the character side. I just, you know, maybe it's just my age or whatever. The separation from her mother is, I don't know, so much more despairing than some of the other aspects of this that you just kind of, okay, I get that. You know what I mean? If that makes any sense.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's an aspect almost of emotional abuse they inflicted upon her. Now, whether that was absolutely necessary given her upbringing or her parentage and stuff,
yeah,
they certainly seem to think so.
Yep.
Doesn't make it any less tragic. But getting, again, to really indulge in her backstory here, this is the kind of stuff that I think these characters, it's not so much that they absolutely needed, but I think they definitely benefited from.
Well, and did we know anything about Azar before this?
That's a great question.
Because I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I think this is her first appearance, and I don't know how many of these people of Azarath we really see after this. And, I mean, we see them here and there, but...
Well, but Azar in particular, with the separation from her mother and the almost proxy mother relationship, and,
mm-hmm.
like I said, it's just... It's kind of a sad, melancholy story, almost, in many ways, and that, you know, then when you get, you know.
Definitely there's a tragic aspect.
Absolutely.
Did we ever get a story, because she's saying at the end, she turns 18, she left, she found the Titans.
Yep.
We saw the finding the Titans part. Did we ever really get to see her making that decision and leaving Azarath?
Wasn't it hinted at in the in the issue where we actually kind of see the battle with Trigon. Like, I want to say it was like issues 8, 9, somewhere in there.
I think it is hinted at. I'm just wondering if they ever, I mean, that seems like a moment or period worthy of a story. You know what I mean?
Yeah, certainly.
So, yeah, I think this did a great job really, you know, given the backstory on this character. And as much as I loved the Teen Titans cartoon and it was fun and it was a different take on the characters, the Raven there and the Raven here are so diametrically opposed at times.
Yeah.
It's just, it's hilarious.
Well, and I've never watched the show really, but I know my daughter watches the current, the Go or whatever.
The Teen Titans Go, which is almost a comedic, not almost, it's literally a
it is.
Parody version of it, yeah.
It really is. And what my daughter thinks of, and, you know, I've seen, you know, she considered Raven as a costume for Halloween, and that character has almost zero to do with this character.
Mm-hmm. Well, this one is quiet and stoic or whatever, whereas at times, the one in the cartoon, if I recall correctly, not having seen the Teen Titans Go, but from the original Teen Titans
yep.
series, is more of a almost dry, sarcastic wit at times.
Yeah.
And it's funny, because I can see where they're drawing aspects of the character from, you know, these versions and such, but I can also see where they went, you know, very different directions.
Yep.
Now, the next issue focuses on Changeling, and the cover, most of the other covers have a bit of a, you know, montage feel to it. This just has a lineup of almost everybody he's ever met, it seems like.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's also got the deepest history out of these four.
Well, and that's what I was just going to say. I know almost nothing about Golden and Silver Age Doom Patrol. How much of this was kind of already known at the time?
I think if you had read all of his other appearances, yeah, I would say quite a bit of this.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole bit with the Arsenal or whatever in here. And I'd completely forgotten there was a villain named the Arsenal, because, of course, that's what Speedy later goes by. But how he got his powers, I think, had been covered in both, I think, the original Teen Titans series and certainly the Doom Patrol stuff. All the bit with the Doom Patrol, a lot of that was covered there. The girlfriend, Jillian, I think, came from there.
I was going to ask, did Jillian exist before this?
Yeah. Titans West certainly existed. I'm pretty sure that Space Trek 2022 existed. And man, if they don't do a one-shot animated Space Trek 2022, you know, it's either a Teen Titans Go or something like that on HBO Max or something, man, they're missing an opportunity. I really love this character and this version of it because he is younger than all of these other Titans by a couple of years. And, I mean, he's either 16 or not quite 16. I forget which it is.
Well, and the artwork, particularly in this series, particularly in that first issue when they're on the camping trips, kind of just getting started.
Mm-hmm.
Between the clothing choices and some other things, he looks even younger than normal, at least to my eye.
I would agree with that. And I think part of it is he's almost at the getting a driver's license stage or thereabouts, whereas Donna is, you know, a professional, you know, photographer or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I forget if she'd gone to college or whatnot. I'm trying to remember if, well, obviously Wally and Raven are going to college.
And Dick's about the same age.
Yeah. So I think he may have either been going or dropped out, or I forget which at this point. So it's not just like he's in junior high and they're in high school kind of a thing. There's just enough of an age gap there that he's a little bit of the odd man out at times. He's the kid of the group.
Yeah. Even though in many ways, other than particularly the ones highlighted in this series, he seems to be the, I don't know, oldest hero. I don't want to say oldest because that's
most experienced.
Wrong. Most experienced. Absolutely.
And depending how long you think Dick Grayson had been Robin at this point, he's not that far behind.
Yeah, I was going to say, Wally and Dick, there's a chance they're about the same number of years kind of in the superhero world. But like I said, the other ones covered in this series,
oh yeah,
he's clearly been around the longest.
Well, yeah, because Vic's been Cyborg at this point a year, maybe?
Yeah.
Raven has been, you know, Raven her whole life, but Raven the superhero, again, 6 months, a year or something. Starfire has been on Earth, you know, however long that would be.
Yeah.
Again, that same 6 months, a year, or what have you. So yeah, definitely he's both the young kid here and the old hand at superheroics.
Yeah, particularly, again, among the particular group we're focusing on in these four issues.
Yeah. Well, and even if you include Wally and Donna and Dick and stuff, they've been members of the Titans and stuff. He's actually, Gar's been a member of the Doom Patrol. So there's sidekicks banding together, and then there's Granite being the junior member of the Doom Patrol, but still, that was a legit superhero team.
Yeah, absolutely. But again, I think the choice to include Changeling in this, and again, I don't know if that's a popularity thing, I think it does clearly speak to the fact that being Batman, the Flash, and Wonder Woman's sidekick gave you more exposure than being a member of the Doom Patrol.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, at this point, Changeling or Beast Boy, you know, Gar, he had been a member of the Doom Patrol, which had literally been blown up at this point, so they were defunct.
Yep.
He'd been a member of Titans West for the handful of issues of the Teen Titans series they showed up in, and they were kind of they're the other team of Titans that nobody talks about.
Yeah.
So he was not pulled into this because he was a bankable character or anything remotely like that. I think it was just I'm not entirely sure why they brought him in. I mean, it seems like a way to, you know, split the difference of having both old and new characters in an even mix on a 7-person team, because he's really a little of both.
Well, and he was the only, there was only two other options, and ultimately, I think he was the right choice. I really do. I think Speedy and the then Aqualad were the only other two options.
I don't know. I mean, they could have gone with Mal or more likely Bumblebee.
Okay.
Golden Eagle would have been a fascinating choice. Glad they didn't pick him, as much as I love the character, but given everything that went on with Hawkman afterwards, that would have been just kind of weird.
Yeah.
Lilith is the other one they maybe could have pulled in, but I think Speedy and Aqualad would have been the most likely other choices. And they do show up, you know, periodically in the title.
Yeah, and both of them were in the Silver Age Titans.
Yep. Yeah. Matter of fact, Aqualad was one of the original three Titans.
Yep.
So, I do love the two-page splash we get on pages 5 and 6 with the Titans West and Doom Patrol and such. And we don't get many two-page splashes at this point.
No, this is one of the only ones.
Yeah. And I loved the bit with the filming of Space Trek 2022 and such. That was just kind of fun. Very clearly, you know, riffing on both Star Trek and Space 1999. Even to the point of it getting shut down and being sued for ripping them off.
Yes.
So, and they touch on his backstory of being an actor and whatnot from time to time. But often it's one of those that's just kind of forgotten about, too.
Where does the wealthy father that we've seen earlier in this series come from?
That would be Mento. If you go back to that two-page splash.
Yep.
That head with the helmet with the antenna thing on it, that's him. He was a kind of fringe member of the Doom Patrol.
Okay.
So, yeah, a lot of Gar's backstory is out of old, you know, classic Doom Patrol stuff.
Yeah.
So, and just what I loved about this was getting his kind of what he's telling the Titans of how wonderful his life had been. And us actually seeing that, yeah, he's embellishing a little bit.
Yeah, it's very Changeling, though. There's so much about this that's, like I said, it's easy to say now, I can't imagine the Titans without him.
No, particularly not this era of the Titans.
Yeah.
He was, from a team dynamic point of view, I think a linchpin character.
Yeah.
He provided the comedic relief when it was needed. There were times he definitely stepped up to the plate. His relationship with Deathstroke, with Terra, with Cyborg, with a number of characters really, you know, defined a large part of this run.
And other than, I guess, Starfire, he's one of the few real Titans that kind of survived all the incarnations since this, too.
I'm not sure about that, actually.
Fair enough.
Starfire definitely was one of the mainstays. A Robin of one variant or another.
Well, yes, A Robin, fair enough.
I think that's, in my mind, mandatory. I think there's only been one or two runs that didn't have a Robin, and you could argue if they were really Titans or not. At least I could argue if they were really Titans or not. I think Changeling was one of the ones that got, I want to say, the short end of the script or whatever with the New 52, because he didn't show up originally, and he was then part of the Ravagers, I think it was, and he was red at that point instead of green.
Yes.
Because they were going for the green being the Swamp Thing plant stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The red being the Animal Man animal power, so of course he'd be red.
But arguably, because I actually enjoyed that series, he was the most Titans-like of that bunch. Because the rest of the Titans were kind of the like new the pseudo Justice League by that. You know, you had that other group that was still these people, but much older.
I'm trying to think who was in that group of Ravagers other than him and Fairchild.
Well, Block, Skitter, and I think Cassie.
Well, that was the Titans.
And Bart Allen, right?
Right, but he was actually a member of a team before joining that group of Titans.
Yeah, with Fairchild, Block, Skitter, right? Isn't that where Skitter and Block came from, isn't it?
Well, I'm trying to remember, because the Block I'm thinking of was a member of the
The
Legion, yeah, yeah.
No, this was the Latin kid with, like, the purple energy.
Oh, Bunker.
Bunker. Sorry, not Block. Yeah, you're right.
Right, right.
And Skitter was, like, the spider chick.
Yeah.
And, like you said, Morgan
Thunder
Fairchild.
And Lightning were the other two.
Yeah, yeah, there you go.
And we'll actually get to them around issue, I want to say 27 or 28, maybe, of this series, of the main series.
So another episode or two.
Yeah, yeah. But that Ravagers title, I think, was, you know, not well thought out or whatever. And then, of course, yeah, he's an iconic Titan. And again, the fact that he goes back to the old school Titan certainly helps on that.
Yeah.
So, the one thing I was disappointed with in this story was the last we see Jillian, I think, she's still in a cage or whatever. And we never really get the, he went back and she was okay.
No, I agree. I think that we see her in that panel, what is it, page 20? And then there's the fight, and, you know, he comes out of the water, and it ends.
Yeah, yeah. So I would have liked to have seen the loop closed on that. I mean, we do see her, I think, later. She's one that, in the few times they've done, like, a miniseries or whatever with Gar, I do think she shows up. I'm not positive about that, but I'm pretty sure she shows up later and stuff. But yeah, this, again, fun one. And I don't know how much of this, other than the whole bit with Arsenal, was new. I think a lot of this was, again, collecting stuff from past events that readers just may not have been familiar with.
Yeah.
Because I'm trying to think when that old Doom Patrol series ended. Because it would have been a good couple of years.
I have almost no knowledge of that series, so I'm not the person to ask.
Well, it started in, I mean, that series start, or that group started in, I want to say 63, 64, thereabouts. And I think when it got to its own title and stuff, I think that ended a few years. I want to say even back in the 60s and stuff. Mm. I think when he was used in the 70s as part of Titans West, it was kind of pulling him out of the mothballs at that point. And that had been a good, you know, by this point, 5 years prior to this. So I think the recap of his origin and stuff, particularly given that trade paperbacks did not exist, and while back issues were, and comic stores were around, they were, you know, much harder to find and whatnot. So either you'd read those stories, or more likely you just hadn't, and you didn't know the stuff.
Yep.
But then, yeah, in this, in the fourth issue with Starfire, this is where I think we get a lot of new information about her, because they really hadn't had the chance to focus a whole lot on her backstory yet.
Not at all. I don't remember much of this in what we've read to this point.
I think around the time this issue came out was, again, that would have been around issue 23 or whatever of the main series, and I think that's where they really start to dive into her backstory. So I think this was kind of setting the stage right around the time it was definitely needed for the main book. there were parts of this I remembered, parts of it I had just kind of forgotten and such. And there were some stuff that they show here, like the experimentation by the Scions that give her and her sister their powers. That later winds up happening to her brother.
Mm-hmm.
Very similar experiments, probably because he was related to these two and such. But definitely setting the sibling dynamic between Corey and her sister and such, much, you know, needed given they were about to go head to the Vegan system and such in the main book.
Yeah, this one, there's a few things that stand out. Some of the art in this one, I think, I don't want to say the most shaky, because I think some of the most beautiful pages in the whole series are in here.
I mean, particularly the starting page.
Which is interesting. Issues 1 and 4 each have a page like this with Cyborg and Starfire.
Mm-hmm.
Arguably, this one should have been the cover. They probably would have had to do something with the spiral to keep all the background they wanted.
I think her flying with the Starbolt and stuff on the cover was fine.
Yeah, it's fine. I actually think this is a better kind of hero image for her. But again, you didn't want to cover up all that background montage work.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like I said, all the issues, well, except 3, have a great first page. There's the Cyborg bounding through the Grand Canyon one. And then the Raven one has that, like, big splash of her and Trigon.
Mm-hmm.
The Changeling one, I'm not even sure it's a single page or splash page.
It was him coming back with the firewood.
Yeah, nothing particularly impressive about that one. But
yeah.
The other 3 are all really great first pages that easily could have been alternate covers.
Mm-hmm. Or posters in and of their own right, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, this is... They sure waited to the last minute on this camping trip to get her origin out and stuff.
Yes, they really did. Also, the younger version is obviously young, but almost looks like a different person. And I'm trying to figure out how to put that.
Which page in particular are you?
Pretty much any of them after about page 4.
Like on page 7 and 8?
7, 8, you know, 9, 10, you know, many of these. There's adult faces, and then there's like babies' faces, and then there's kind of the in-between child faces.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't seem to have a child face. These all appear to be babies' faces on a 6 to 7-year-old to 10-year-old. It's a real nitpicky art thing, never mind.
No, I get what you're saying. I mean, it's recognizably her.
Absolutely.
But I think also applying kind of human norms on aliens. That's the excuse I'm going to give.
Fair enough. But yeah, she doesn't look like a child. She just looks like a really big baby, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Well, and I think the other thing...
Page 10 is probably the least bothersome of that set.
Well, the other thing I think is a little challenging is the huge hair that they've got.
Well, yeah.
That throws, I don't want to say the perspective off or something, but it certainly looks weird.
In page 6, it's a wonderful idea with the negative space. I don't think it worked or helped the storytelling.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
You got to take chances of, you know, certainly it's just that particular one I just don't think ended up working as well as you wanted it to, or mm-hmm. as well as Mr. Perez wanted it to.
I think that page in general could have been more effective both without that, and it was a montage that was a little light on stuff.
It was light. There's lots other than the negative image. There's lots of just yellow empty space. The composition's not great. Yeah,
this guy on her world is always yellow here. I'm trying to remember if it was always that way when we see it elsewhere.
Yeah.
And it'd be interesting to get an explanation as to why it's yellow.
But if you just look at it as a whole page,
mm-hmm.
and if you look again at like her image in the middle of it, upper and central left sides have color, and all you see on the right side entirely and across the bottom is just that yellow, that pale yellow. And like I said, Mr. Perez is a wonderful artist. This just isn't one of my favorite pages.
Yeah, and it's not like horrible or anything. It was just they tried something, it didn't quite work.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and we get a lot, not only of Corey's backstory, but we learn a lot about her world.
And her family.
Yeah, her family, certainly. But they're a peaceful race that's been at war for ages.
Yep.
We learned about the warlords of Okara and stuff, how she trained with them. We'd gotten some hints of that a couple issues back. Matter of fact, I think Donna even comments on that at one point in here. And there's a couple of times where we get a little bit of a time jump. Like, I'm not sure how long she spent training on Okara.
Yeah.
I do know they make a point of she was a Citadel slave for 6 years.
Yeah. Yeah, and Donna does make the point, like, oh, you mean they're real?
Mm-hmm. So there's a lot, again, about the dynamic between her and her sister, again, the family backstory, which at this point we knew bits and pieces of. She was escaping from something for some reason. And this was one of those things that I think throughout the series has always been a little bit of a ticking clock of at some point they're going to have to deal with that.
Yeah.
And sure enough, by, you know, around issue, I think, 23 and stuff in the main series, they do start to deal with that.
Yep. And the whole, the kind of the final battle with Commander, and that's another interesting one.
Mm-hmm.
Arguably, she ages completely as she loses there. You go from that giant baby I was referring to, and on the bottom of page 12, she's pretty much fully grown by the bottom of that page. Keeps that form thereafter.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, almost like that fight, I don't know, changed her, which Aqua did. But
well, and again, in
it's
this
a
whole
visual cue, I think, to how that affected her.
Yeah, but I think this is also, you know, this whole bit with their training and stuff spanned over years. So when we started, they were probably, you know, 4 or 5 years younger than where they are at the end of this sequence.
Absolutely. But I'm really referring to that, which for the graduation exercise.
Mm-hmm.
Again, if you look at page 11, the two facing each other in the middle of the page, that's still a very, very childlike face.
Yes.
And then, like I said, by the bottom of 12, that's pretty much fully grown Starfire. And arguably that's the same, it's moments later.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say the middle panel there at the bottom of 12, certainly for Blackfire there, the sister.
Mm-hmm.
That's, okay, she's coming to her own. She's the villain she was going to be, kind of thing.
Yeah, well, like I said, that those last two panels kind of age both of them. Which,
yeah,
again, is just kind of a, you know, one way to look at it is it's odd. The other way to look at it is it's kind of a brilliant visual cue to, you know, adjustments in their psyche and how they now see the world.
They aged in those moments, kind of a
thing.
Yeah. Yeah, they did some interesting stuff, and also establishing that her sister couldn't fly and had always felt a little less because of that.
Yep.
Yeah, there's a lot of world building going on in this issue.
Yes.
And it's not the least bit derivative of Star Wars, but it does in places have a bit of a Star Wars vibe to it.
I can see that, yeah.
And at this point, we have not met the Omega Men, so they're not a thing yet, but I think that's... That happens, I think, before too long. That may even happen in the arc when they go visit her world and such. I'm pretty sure it does. So we really start to build out the whole Vegan star system, and this is really the first serious look we've had at it. Matter of fact, I'm not sure we'd seen much, if any, of it prior to this issue. So we get introduced to a number of different races and stuff, and start to get a feel for what that part of the galaxy is like.
Yeah, and I seem to remember, was it when we were doing Crisis or something else, there was a whole section, I don't remember if it was that, or Crisis in Time, or Zero. I remember we, like, came across a few issues where they were headed off to Vega, like, in footnotes, but we never actually read them.
That was in Crisis.
Yep.
Where it was tying into issues 13 and 14 or whatever of the then new Teen Titans series.
Yeah.
And they were heading off to go back.
Yeah, and I don't think I've ever read those issues. We'll probably come across them here at some point.
Yeah, that'll probably be, let's see, that would be 85. We're around 82 at this point, so it'd be another, you know,
yep,
three dozen issues thereabouts.
Yep.
Give or take. Plus a few annuals, a few specials, you know, whatever.
Miniseries like this, possibly.
Possibly.
Yes.
There weren't too many miniseries, though, at the time. That's again, part of what was so unusual with this. So yeah, I thought this was just a ton of fun. Nice to see these characters again in their off moments. I really think they should have done more of this type of miniseries over the years after this.
These are interesting. They're really enjoyable. They're kind of quiet, touching moments.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly you can't say nothing happens or there's not action in these, because all of those things are also true of these stories.
Yeah.
But the framing sequences are very nice, and you kind of get to know about them and how they relate to each other as well as, you know, whatever the story is being focused on.
It's good team building, both, you know, in terms of us reading it, getting to know the team, and then getting to know each other.
Yeah.
And, I mean, a second miniseries like this almost, you know, lays itself out, because it could be 6 months, a year later, whatever, and we get Kid Flash, Wonder Girl, Robin, and the History of the Titans for the four issues. Now, give it another few years, you would have Terra, you would have Jericho, you would have a couple other characters you could do. And I think they did go on camping trips like this later, but not as a miniseries like this. But yeah, it's... And this was something that is kind of, I think, unique to this team, much like the baseball games are kind of with the X-Men and the JLA-JSA crossovers with the JLA and that kind of a thing.
Yeah, I don't know if I think of them as crossovers, but yeah, these were... I don't know. Like I said, I really enjoyed this. It seems like something that's fairly common these days, but there weren't a lot of issues like this back then.
I guess my point is the Titans took the time to do almost introspective stories like this series, like the Letter Home one, and a few things like that we were getting almost on a yearly basis.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I forgot, yeah, that right, the Wally and the Letter. I forgot about that. We covered that last time, I think.
Yeah, and there was another one around issue 8 or whatever that was kind of the day in the life sort of a thing.
Yeah, when they were hanging out at the pool at Changeling's place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they tended to do and that kind of just hanging out as friends sort of a thing, which was more of a thing in comics back at this point in time in general. But also, I think the way they did it with the Titans was a little different than how they did it on some of the other books elsewhere.
Yeah.
So yeah, I thought this was a ton of fun. Really enjoyed it. The 25 pages, I think, gave them the time to spend a few moments on the framing sequence and really give the good backstory on each of the characters.
Yeah, no, the series was great.
So, anything else?
No, I think I'm good.
Cool.
The January previews came out on December 29th, and the deadline for preview spotlight number 170 is the morning of Saturday, January 8th. Recording clips for the preview spotlight episodes is easy, and we've got an open submission policy for these episodes. Please send in clips to support the comics you love as often as you can. If you'd like to get email reminders for the preview spotlight episodes, you can join the emailing list on the main page of the comicbookpage.com website.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.